Super happy to be here today. Thank you. Today and every day, I'm happy to be here. Well, happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there, especially my own awesome, amazing mother is here, who I love. Woohoo! And we all love. This isn't super related to what I'm sharing, but I did look up the history of Mother's Day, and I found it really interesting. In England, or in the UK and Europe, Mother's Day started during Lent, which is the season leading up to Easter, as everyone would go back to their mother church and like kind of honor the church that raised them and gave birth, you know, spiritually to them, which I thought was cool. And then here in America, in the U.S., it started with two women during the Civil War, the end of the Civil War. They started what they called Mother's Day. And what that day was is they rallied women to go volunteer in the hospitals to help decrease infant mortality and to take care of wounded soldiers. And I thought that was pretty awesome, too. And just rallying women to serve in the public arena and to serve, really, and to have influence in society. So I love that. I thought that was super cool. And then the daughter of one of those women who did that is the one who sort of petitioned to start Mother's Day, which I love that our country and many countries do that they have honored something that God instituted, you know, mothers and fathers, the family unit. Our nation honors his plan without even knowing it. So I think it's fantastic. I am going to share today not maybe the most typical Mother's Day message, but it is for mothers, and God has been speaking it to me, and I'm a young mom, so I know it's applicable for mothers. It's also for fathers and sons and daughters and brothers and sisters and employees and any human heart that is here. This message is for you. I know God wants to speak to us and has been speaking to us. For any heart that has been waiting to have kids, or you know, you're in the waiting and that hasn't been fulfilled to you yet, and you're longing and aching for that, this is for you, because God sees you and God hears you and God knows your heart, and He's there in the waiting. It's a very popular song right now, apparently, but it's a good line, because He's there in the waiting. So God is hearing your heart, and He is the God who sees you. So I'm going to start. I didn't text my verses to Sarah in time, so I don't know if they're going to be up on the board. But if you have a Bible, you can follow me, because I do have a bunch of verses I'm going to be sharing about today, or sharing from today, I should say. For those of you who don't know, I have four kids. Two of them are here, these two cute kids in the front here, and my other two are in the back, and I homeschool them, so I'm with them a lot, a lot, and so everything I'm sharing is coming from my heart and what God's teaching me. God, like, motherhood has been the number one tool in my life. It's been going on for like 8.5 years now. So it's been the number one tool that God's used in my life to really shape me and humble me and grow me. And so I'm speaking just out of what God has been doing in my life. And I'm talking about drinking from the cup that God has given us. And I'm going to start in Psalm 23, where this is a psalm from David. And people say that this is written in the latter part of his life, after he was mature and had been through many trials, many struggles, had wandered in the desert, had been almost killed. Had, I mean, just his story was, you know.
You can read about it in the Bible. His story is pretty epic. Lots of ups and downs. And he wrote this song kind of at the end, they say, the people who know, the scholars and things, that they think he wrote it at the end when he had this assurance of God's presence and consistency in his life. So,
read it to you. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his namesake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So I'm focusing there. God's been speaking to me about drinking the cup he's given me. And I'm starting with this verse because David is talking about his cup and how it overflows. And with goodness and with mercy, and the cup that God has given him is a good thing. And there's other places in Psalms where it talks about, my portion is good, my inheritance is good, my cup is good. And it's surrounded by struggles. You know, he's talking about being in the valley of darkness and death. He's talking about being surrounded by enemies. But even in that place, his cup overflows with goodness, with mercy, with joy. Okay, so I've been thinking about this, and switching over here to John 18:11, another place where we read about this cup that God has given us. And this is Jesus in the garden, and he has just been betrayed by Judas, one of his followers, one of his disciples. And he came at night with soldiers and the high priests and to arrest Jesus. And one of Jesus' followers, Peter, freaks out, and there's this huge crowd at them at night with torches and soldiers with weapons. But he decides to pull out his sword and reaches over and cuts off the ear of the high priest's servant, which I think is a little intense, truthfully. But Jesus, I was like, wow, Peter, you're going to take them all on, huh? But he does it, and Jesus looks at him and says, Peter, put your sword away. And then he says this, and I'm going to read it. He said to Peter, put your sword into its sheath. Shall I not drink the cup that the Father has given me? So in that moment, I'm just like, wow, Jesus, he says this in other versions. He says, don't you know, I could call, like, a legion of angels right now, and they could rescue me. You know, Jesus could have done anything with his time here on the earth. They lived in a very corrupt government, and they were oppressed, his people, the Jews. And he could have wiped out the corrupt government. He could have replaced them with godly men and women. He could have done anything on this earth, but he knew where God had called him, where his Father had called him, and he knew the cup that his Father had given him. And in this moment, facing even struggles, even the darkest time any of us would ever face, we will never face the struggle and the pain and the suffering that Jesus faced, being separated from his Father, carrying the weight of the sin on his own, of the world on his shoulders. We will never drink that cup. But even when facing that, Jesus said, don't try and fight this. Shall I not drink the cup that God has given me, that my Father has given me? And I love this because we see in it, and we see in Jesus' heart, who is the one we're meant to be like. We see his willingness to embrace and accept and drink deep of the circumstances, of the story that God was writing with his life. We see him taking that cup and being willing, I'm going to drink this cup, I'm going to drink it deep, and I'm not going to fight it. And I've been asking, you know, myself this question. I've been going through this journey for a long time of embracing the cup that God's given me, and comes up in many different ways, but this story I feel like is like just really captures the journey that I've been going on. So in this effort, in this journey that God's brought me, where I can say and look and go, I'm going to drink the cup that God's given me with grace and with joy. After I had just gotten married, me and Dave got married, and we lived in what we called the Love Shack because it was this really tiny shack that was a beach house. And when we moved in, we totally didn't realize it had zero insulation because it was a beach house. You're only supposed to live there in the summer. So we moved in. We got married in October, and we moved in. And like November, December, I would pull in from work, and I'd be like, I'm not getting out of the car. Like, I'm freezing. I would sit in the car and just be like, I don't want to go inside. It's just so cold. And the shower, the water didn't get hot. Like, nothing worked. You know, nothing would make you hot in that house. I would, like, sleep in the morning with, like, 700 blankets. And nothing made us warm in that house. Nothing. So in that situation, then we got pregnant pretty quickly with Micah, our son. And we were like, we can't bring a baby home to this freezing house. So we were praying and just like waiting on God. So God totally supernaturally like broke in and provided this house out of the blue that we were going to basically house it indefinitely for a couple who had retired and couldn't sell it. They didn't want to necessarily rent it. So we were basically living there just for cost. And it was supernatural. It was amazing, right? We were so thankful. But within a few months, maybe a year, I don't know, a few months, I suddenly got this bug in me where I was like, nah, like I need to own my own home. Like this renting thing, I can't decorate like I want. I can't like own, like I need to own. And I had recently taken a personality test that Steph recommended called, I gotta get the number right this time. I think it's 16personalities.com. I hope. You can go look it up after. But yes, okay, it's 16 personalities. So it's good. There's only 16 personalities in the world. That's a relief. I had recently taken the test, and it had come back that I was like an adventurer. And while I'm reading this test, I was like, oh my gosh, they like nailed my personality. How do they know me so well? Like, this is me. I need change. And I look back over my life and I'm like, okay, I can see. So obviously God gave me this personality. It has an awesome side and God's using it and gonna use it. But then every strength has a weakness, right? So I can see where my flesh is like really capitalized on this personality that God gave me. And you're going to see it in this story. So I'm like ready for the next adventure. I'm ready to own the home. And so I'm looking online. And Dave keeps being like, hon, you know, God like gave us this house. We should just save money. And I'm like, hon, we need to own. We need to own a house. And he was like, well, I don't know, you know. And so I'm looking. I find this house. I found a bunch of houses. But I found this one that was in Windham for like really inexpensive. I thought, this is great. We'll be close to the church. I called the realtor. And I'm like, bring the papers. We're buying this house. And I sent the link to my parents, and so we pull up to the house, and I get a phone call from my dad right as we're pulling in the driveway, and he's like, so I was looking online, and I noticed that there was a landfill, like, right behind your yard, and I was like, oh, Dad, don't worry about it. We won't drink the tap water. It's fine. We're fine, and he's like, okay. So we get to the house, and we open the door. We start walking through, and Dave's, like, knocking on the walls, because the walls were cardboard, like stapled onto the wood. And he was like, hun, and I'm like, what? Just gonna throw some sheetrock up. This is nothing. And there was like a big hill in the back, and it ended in a swamp, like a little swamp. And Dave's like, this is a swamp and a hill. Like, this would be hard for the kids. I'm like, hun, we could take our canoe out on that lake, that river. I'm like, this is gonna be beautiful. This is gonna be great. And the realtor's like calling Dave to the side, and he's like, don't buy this house. Like, please don't buy this house. And so, needless to say, we did not buy that house, but I wanted to, okay? That was not because of me that we didn't buy it. But I got home and I was like all discouraged. I'm like, oh, you know, this plan of mine isn't working out. And that night, God gave me a dream. And in the dream, he gave me the key to a house. And on the key was written contentment. And I was like, oh my gosh. Right? So, God has been on a journey for a long time in my life to teach me, are you gonna drink the cup that I've given you? He's given us all circumstances, situations, children, no children, jobs, life experiences. These are all graces coming from God. Even when they're the hard, hard, hard stuff, they are grace and a gift from God for your good and for the good of the world around you. Are we gonna drink fully of the cup that God has given us, or are we gonna fight it and pursue our own way? And so this has been, you know, my journey. And I do have relapses, but thank God, you know, they're less and less frequent and intense. but even recently, I had kind of felt this, like, you know, God is always doing new things in our life. And so there's that balance of going, what is God doing? And embracing exactly where he's put you with full heart. And I had recently come to Dave again and been like, tears. I was like, I don't know, hon. I just think this is change, maybe, blah, blah, blah. Like, something exciting, this adventure. And Dave's listening. And He's very silent. And then at the end, he's like, well, I just think you need to find rest in God. And I was like, what? That is not what I wanted to hear. Excuse me for a moment. I just, you know, went and composed myself. But it was God speaking into my life in that moment about the fact that I was not drinking fully the cup that God has given me, that I wasn't fully embracing where God's put me, why he's put me here, and throwing 100% of my energy into that. God has specifically chosen you for the life and for the circumstances that you're in right now. I love going back to Psalms 23, how David says, you anoint my head. And when they're talking about that anointing of the head, that is God choosing you. When they say you're anointed, like that means you're chosen. That's what that is symbolizing in the Bible. It means that you're chosen. And so for me right now, I'm a young mom with 4 kids that I'm home with all the time, right? So I wake up in the morning and I'm like, Father, God, thank you that you have chosen me for this job. And specifically me, like no other. You chose me for this season, for this time, for this place. You know, like Esther in the Bible, she had a really, it was not an ideal situation in the midst of like an oppressive ruler. She's like plucked from her home. She's taken as the wife of the king, but she didn't even know if she was going to get to be his wife. If she wasn't chosen, she would have had to live with other women in like the harem for the rest of her life. Talk about dreams dashed. But yet her uncle spoke into that situation and said, you have been anointed, you've been chosen for this time, this place, this season. So her life was completely out of control, completely not what she was planning. And yet God said, I chose you exactly for that. So I wake up in the morning and I go, God, you chose me for this job, which means I'm anointed, which means God has given us everything we need to accomplish what he's put before us and to embrace and drink fully what God has put in your path. I'm going to drink from my cup here. So in this process that God's been bringing me through, I want to talk about too. I love my phone. I love my phone. That's not what I was going to say, though. But I don't know what I just did with my phone, but... typical. I don't know where my phone is if you try and call me, typically. But yeah, my kids probably have it somewhere. But so I don't have it word for word, but in the passage talking about, oh, you know, I haven't even gotten to that passage yet, so I'll skip that. But I want to talk about, I'll get to it, but I want to talk about the fact that with David and with Jesus, okay, both of these cups, like when we're talking about drinking the cup, it does involve hardship. It does involve the flesh dying. It does involve this sacrificing of self, this laying down our will for what God's story is trying to write. It's not about us. It's about us laying our life down for the fact that God is writing a story and we get to be part of it. But both of these passages talk about doing it for the joy. And I want to like really get that across because it's what God has been driving home to me, that we're doing this for joy. It is joy that drives us. It is joy at the end of the journey. It is, yes, it's embracing, it's drinking the cup that God's given us with grace and with joy. It's not just, you know, grit and just suffering through always. I mean, sometimes it is just like grit and like, you got this, you're going to do this. But it should come from a place where inside of us, like Wesley preached a couple weeks ago, it's rooted in joy. So we're going to talk about that too, but in this journey that I've been going on, where I'm embracing, you know, motherhood, that's the, like I said, for me, that's what this has been about in this season. And for all of you, it may be that, it may be something different. It may be about embracing where you are in your work, in your home, with relationships, in your church, about drinking fully where God's called you to. Embracing motherhood, in essence, it's been me embracing discipleship. And I'm going to tell you, when we start drinking the cup, God starts transforming our minds so we can actually see our situation from heaven's perspective. And we're not just like struggling and questioning and suffering through. We get to see what God has seen it as. And we get to see how it fits into the big picture of God's story. And for, in essence, like mothering parenting is discipleship. It's discipling people for the kingdom of God, to serve God, and we're all called to that. So, like I said, this is for every heart. Anyone who is going to be discipling someone, which the word disciple really means being a learner. So if we're disciples of Christ, if we're learning, we're receiving input from the people around us that God's put, that's the only way to disciple other people. So how do we do that? Well, how do I drink this cup that God's put before me? And I'm going to just go to a couple verses here that God's been speaking to me from. So Mark 4, 21. And so, and Jesus said to them, Jesus has been speaking in parables to his disciples. He said, "Is a lamp brought in to be put under a basket or under a bed and not on a stand? For nothing is hidden except to be made manifest, nor is anything secret except to come to light. If anyone has ears to hear, let him hear." And he said to them, "Pay attention to what you hear. With the measure you use, it will be measured to you, and still more will be added to you. For to the one who has, more will be given, and from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away." So God's speaking this to my life, talking about being a light. You know, God's given us all gifts and grace. He's given you your circumstances. He's given you the people in your life. These are all gifts from God, all graces from God, even the difficult situations, even the hard things. This is grace from God for our greater good, for our eternal good. And so every grace, gift, good that God has given us, ultimately what this verse is showing is that it's for the purpose, everything done in secret is for the purpose eventually of the public ministry. So I'm not talking just like of a person, but everything done in secret is going to be publicly displayed for the glory of God. And I've always read that verse feeling like anything you do in secret is going to be exposed, which, you know, as a kid, that's so true, right? Our moms all have eyes on the back of their head. But, and I mean, I know that it does cover that, but that verse is also talking about everything we do in the secret place, everything we do in secret is for the purpose of being exposed for God's glory. It will come to the public arena because God wants to glorify himself. So I'm looking at my own life, and I'm asking myself, in the secret place of my house, where I'm just like alone a lot, you know, with my kids, all the time with my kids, but how am I measuring out to them? It says, "For the measure that I use, it will be measured to me." So how am I measuring out grace to them? How am I measuring out kindness to my kids? How am I measuring out compassion to my kids? Forgiveness? How am I measuring out to them joy and enjoyment? How am I measuring out consistency and discipline? How am I measuring this out to them? How am I doing that when I'm trying to teach math, the worst subject on the earth, and my kid is giving me lip? Sorry, if you love math, sorry. But like, seriously, you're trying to teach math and you're getting sass. It's like the worst of all worlds. And so I'm like, Lord, I'm in the hidden place right now. I'm in the secret. This is going to bring you glory in the public eye someday. But that is true. And in that moment, how am I measuring out the grace of God? How am I measuring out patience right in that moment? Because it may be the secret place, and it may be easy just to freak out and be like, "Ah, that's it. Get in your room. It's over. You're grounded forever." But what I do in secret is going to measure the amount of glory I'm able to bring God before the eyes of the world. And it's not about me, but it's about God's glory. The more that we measure out the character and the qualities of God in that secret place, the more we're going to have the capacity for influence, for power, for being able to influence hearts towards God, towards his kingdom, to be able to speak into people's lives. You know, someone texted me the other day and was like, "Does homeschooling get any easier?" Like, this was her first year. And I was like, "I don't think it does." But maybe, like, I've only been doing this for 3 years, but I said, but here's the thing that does happen. when you fully commit to it. Because even I, like at the beginning, I'm like, do this for, like I just wasn't willing to jump all the way in and fully drink my cup, you know? I was like towing the line. But as I went and as I was more willing to fully commit my heart to drinking the cup that God has given me in this season at this time, my shoulders broadened, and I said, that's what happens. Your shoulders broaden, and you can carry more weight. That's the beautiful thing about, that's the way it gets easier, in a sense, even though it doesn't get easier. You grow. Your capacity grows. You're able to do more, to understand more, to influence more. So the measure that we have, that we're willing to give out, that is the measure that God is going to measure back to us in our ability to progress his story on this earth, because it's not about us. It's about his story on this earth, and he's writing it, and do we want to be a part? And I know for myself, like for my own heart, I said this in the beginning but of last service, but I didn't put any mascara on my bottom eyelashes because I knew that I was going to like tear up all the time, so I thought that was a good move, yeah. But in my own life, you know, my heart, I'm like so hungry for God to be glorified, and a lot of times it's easy to go, well, I'm just home, like, all day, like, how is this? I mean, I'm not home all day, but you know what I'm saying, like, we're doing the mundane, we're doing the stuff at home that's just like the nitty-gritty, the like repetitive, like every day that isn't seemingly powerful, it's not seeming like it's transforming nations, but God, what God has been utterly speaking in my heart is like, you do excellently here. If you will fully drink the cup where God has placed you, if you will fully drink and not shake off those, try and run, try and escape, like try and get out, try and do something exciting and new all the time. If you will fully drink the cup where God has put you, that is where his glory is going to be most exposed in the public arena. What you've been doing in the private, this is where God's going to show who he is to people around you in the public. It will happen. So remembering that what we measure out is the measure that God's going to give back to us in his kingdom. That's the way his kingdom works. Yeah. My kids always write like lots of art on my notes. So I'm like weeding through that. It's really great. It's inspiring. I'm going to go to Hebrews now, Hebrews 12, which Dave told me is potentially the best book in the Bible. So I was like, cool, maybe I should pick a verse from there. Just kidding. But Hebrews 12. So as we're walking, as we're drinking the cup that God's put before us, I'm going to read this in light of that. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. So we all kind of know that sin holds us back. We know that when we're in the race, when we're pursuing Christ, we're in the race of life, we know sin is a definite. Like, sin holds you back. And Steph preached about this last week in her sermon. She talked about how sin can really keep you from being able to fully pursue God and fully fulfill your call on this earth. But what about the weights? That's what I'm thinking about right now. I'm thinking about sin and repenting, like consistently repenting of sin and turning away. But what about the weights that hold us down? And that, like, different versions say they hinder us, or they're impediments, or they're weights. Anything that holds us back in this race. And I know for, like, real runners, not like people like me who jog a few, like, around the block, and I'm like, I just ran, took a run. For, like, real runners, they do everything to, like, throw off any weight that might keep them back. They wear, like, borderline inappropriate shorts and things like that, just so that they can really run, like, really be able to run. So we're talking about any weight that may hold you back. And I'm just going to be really vulnerable about things that in my own life have held me back, like things that are weights. And I'm sharing them because I'm fine being vulnerable, but also because I'm not super unique. I know that I'm not the only person who deals with these things, that it's a human condition. So, but comfort is like one of the number one things that holds us back when we're really trying to dig in and drink the cup that God's given us, knowing there's joy before us. Comforts can really, like, waylay us. Is that the right word? Like, waylay us. Like, yes, okay. Good thing I'm homeschooling my kids. But I read an article recently where a mom was saying, how addicted to comfort am I that when my kids come and really vie for my attention, I'm like, ah, stop, you know. And I know we all have moments where you need to find your resource in Christ so you have something to give out. But I was so struck by that, like, how addicted to comfort are we? And I know as a society we are, and then I'm looking at myself, and I'm like, oh, man. And I know I said in the first thing, I know this isn't necessarily sin, right? I'll just throw it out there. But, like, when you hide in the bathroom from your kids and you eat chocolate and you hid it, like, previously because you don't want your kids to find it because you just want it for yourself and you want to be alone and you want to eat it. And so I know that's not sin, okay? I know it's not sin, so don't go home thinking that, anyone. But there have been times when truly I should have been doing something else and I'm escaping. I'm just constant mental escapes, like, you know, doing the thing that makes me comfortable, like eating chocolate by myself. That's kind of sad, but, you know, we all have our stuff, right? But there are times when that's really held me back, when God is calling me to do something else, to speak to my kid right then, or whatever it may be, but I'm letting comfort hold me back. Or watching TV shows, like, all you want at the end of the day is to curl up in a ball on the couch with a blanket over your head, maybe, with just your eyes slit so you can see the TV. You don't want anyone talking to you, touching you, nothing, like. And I'm not saying that's sin either, but I am saying that there are times when we're too addicted to that. Like, that is the goal at the end of the day, that we've lost all the joy of the journey that we're in because our eyes are just so glued onto that moment of physical comfort that, like, we're just desperate for. And, I mean, that confronts me all the time. Like, what are you doing, Becca? Like, you're just trying to get through this day so you can comfort yourself at the end of the day when the kids are finally in bed. No, comfort is a weight. Like, addiction to comfort is a weight that is holding me back from running the race and fully engaging where God has me right now. So I'm encouraging us all, shed off that weight of comfort. Another one is selfish ambition. We want to make a name for ourselves. We want to be successful. It's self-centered. Even it happens in the church. It happens with every human soul. You know, we want to be the best this or the pastor instead of just this or, you know, whatever it may be. Selfish ambition is a weight that is going to hold you back. And that is sin, actually. It's also a weight. It's both, you know, it fits into both categories. Coveting and jealousy, and I've dealt with this in my life before too. You're just, you want to be in a different sphere of life. You want to be, for me, you know, like, I want to be the, who they look at them, they get to, like, travel and minister in all the countries of the world, and they're prophesying over people and words of knowledge on the street, and everyone thinks they have the best gift, and whatever it may be. I mean, it could be, it's different for everyone, but it's, in its core, it's coveting someone else's gift, someone else's life. It's jealousy over where they are in life. It's a different role than mine. They're drinking a different cup, and I think I want it. Mm. And that's a weight, and it's sin. Living in regret, that's another weight that's going to hold you back. The what if I only did this, if only I had done that, what if I could have done this? And it's a weight that is going to hold you back from running your race because God's grace is going to meet you right here, right now, right where you are. The past is the past, and we need to lay it at the cross because it will hold us back. It will be a weight that hinders us, and we need to be able to see God's hand, that he has been sovereign over every moment of our life and that he has a story. And it's his, and he's progressing it. It's not about us, so leave the past. You know, Paul talks about it. He says, I forget what's behind. And he had a bloody past. He killed people, okay? Like, so he said, I forget what's behind, and I strain toward what is ahead. I strain toward the goal. So regret. Don't live in it. Leave it at the foot of the cross. Idolizing cultural expectations, what you think you should be. I mean, the most common one I get for the situation I'm in is like, oh, you're just a stay-at-home mom. Oh, what do you do all day? Nothing. I hide in the bathroom and eat chocolate. um, I do say that line sometimes, and it makes them laugh, you know. But that's mine. You know, that's what I deal with the whole, like, cultural expectations. What about a career? What about this? And God's called people and moms and to careers, and I'm just saying everyone's cup is different. And so don't let cultural expectations define whether you're going to drink fully of the cup that God's given you. You know, I love this one. Struck me really hard when I was thinking about this. Like, people are totally cool with you moving across the world for a job, but you say you're moving across the country or the state or the town for your church, and they're like, what? Isn't there a church near you? Like, so it's just cultural expectations really can shape us. Lay them at the foot of the cross. Just let them go, because God has a different plan for your life. We're not of this world, and they will be a weight that holds us back from fully drinking and enjoying who God is and the cup he's given us. And this is where, and I found my phone. It's hiding in my Bible. Yes, that's where it always is. I go to my Bible before my phone. So this is the complete Jewish, in the bathroom, the complete Jewish version, and I just love the way they say this, and I'm going to read it. This is Hebrews 12 again, talking about being surrounded by. Okay, not 12 again. This is my first time, right? Did I already read that? No, I did read it. Okay, so it's again. So Hebrews 12, 1 through 2. And they talk about being surrounded by the cloud of witnesses. And that cloud of witnesses is talking about all the men and women throughout history that really did embrace and drink the cup that God had given them, and talking about their faith and how it impacted the world and what they did. So if you haven't read it, read Hebrews 11, because it will inspire you and give you insight and encourage you. So this is the cloud of witnesses they're talking about here. And so he's talking about putting aside every weight. And then he says, always looking to the initiator and completer of your faith, Yeshua, who in exchange for obtaining the joy that was set before him, endured the cross. So I love the way they say that, because it's not just the focus on the cross that Jesus was bearing. And like I said, and Sean said it in the first service, because of the cup that Jesus drank, none of us have to drink that cup. And that's amazing, you know, because of his sacrifice, because of the cross, what he's done, we don't have to do that. We don't have to drink that cup. And it sort of puts into light our cup is less than that. We can do this by the power of God in us. But talking even in that most excruciating of cups that Jesus was drinking, that it was for the joy. It said, in exchange to get the joy that he saw, he embraced, he drank that cup fully. He embraced the cross because of the joy. And Wesley preached about this a couple weeks ago, and I was super, so struck with this, like, the joy. Where's the joy, you know, in my own heart? And that, when I had had that conversation with Dave, where he, you know, was like the mouthpiece of the Lord, and I didn't want to hear it, but I heard it. And so I was thinking about it the next day and sort of meditating on it. And God, I say God, but, like, you know, I stumbled, because God's hand is always on our lives and he's leading us. But I stumbled upon this blog that recommended this podcast, that, and I started listening to it. And this podcast was talking about how important it is in parenting for us to do things that we enjoy, because our kids want to be enjoyed by us, and they want to see you enjoying life. And I was so struck with that, because I was like, man, so much of my attitude has just been about, like, grit. Just like, we're going to do this. God has called me to this. And I'm like, and I've known before, like, this is so lacking the joy, but, like, I don't know. I don't know yet. So finally God is really, like, opening my eyes to that. And he told me, when I heard that, he said, this is the year of enjoying. This is the year of enjoying. And I was like, found that so interesting, because right before that, he's been speaking to me about drinking my cup fully and not, like, towing the line, not, I was just sort of going to swear, like, half, you know, halving it. I can't say that in a sermon, but whew, caught myself there. You know, like, not, Josiah used to say this about confession, when you, like, confess a sin, but you don't, like, fully say the sin. He called it, like, rubber knifing it, like you're using a rubber knife. Like, there's just so many times where, like, I've done something, but I know I haven't thrown my entire, like, heart into it, because I don't really want to do it. I'm just, like, kind of doing it for the, like, I know it's the right thing, but I've not certainly enjoyed it. And so God's speaking to me, saying, I want you to enjoy these things. So while he's telling me to do a bunch of stuff that I don't necessarily like want in my flesh to do when it comes to parenting and whatnot, he's also telling me, you're going to enjoy this. Right? And it's like the paradox of God, though, is like when we drink the cup, just like Jesus, he was exchanging, he was drinking the cup, he was doing the cross for the joy that was set before him. He was exchanging that for joy. And so this is God's heart. He is going to bring us joy. And I have to say, I've been experiencing it and tasting it, and I can, you know, laugh more and smile more. And God is most glorified in my enjoying where he's put me. And that is where it comes to drinking the cup God's giving you with grace and with joy. It's not just like some of the smoothies that, I'm not going to say names, but some of the smoothies that I was fed as a child, where you're just like, I'm going to drink this. You just like quickly get it down as fast as you can possibly bear. But it's not always like that. It's drinking the cup with grace and with joy. And when you're drinking it, the joy comes from knowing God is glorified most in this. And it's not about me. It's about his story progressing. But I get to be a part. And the role is up to us. Like, not the role, but the extent is up to us. Like I said about broadening your shoulders. You know, you read about the fact that any follower of Christ is called to disciple nations. And I was like, disciple a nation? Like, I'm having trouble discipling 4 children. Like, disciple a nation. That's interesting. But where God is bringing us is that our shoulders, we do it with the 1. We do it with the 2. We do it with the 3. We do it at home. We do it alone. And our shoulders are broadening. And so we can carry the weight of God's glory. And he gives it to us so that more and more and more people can see it. And it's not just our own strength, but it's Christ in us. Because I could write a list. And trust me, I have. Even as a kid, I write lists like, be kind. This is what God requires. Like, the list is long, right? It's like this big. Like, it's a really long list. And then you just will crumble it and throw it in the trash because you're like, I can't do this. This is ridiculous. Like, it's just not humanly possible. And this is where the Spirit of God has to come in, where it's not about us just doing a to-do list. It's not about us just saying, we're just going to drink this cup that God's given us with grace and joy. It's about the Spirit of God giving us power because his glory is on the line. And that's his heart. And in conclusion here, I just want to challenge us. I'm challenging myself because this is what God's been speaking to me in my life. Committing to drink the cup that God's given you, knowing that when we do that, we're exchanging it for the joy of God in our lives. And that when we have the joy of God in our lives, God's glory is able to shine. The things that we're doing in secret, at home, with our kids, at work, when no one's seeing what you're doing, the measure that we're measuring out, the willingness that we have to pour our hearts into that and to embrace where God's put us, that is the measure that God's going to pour out on our lives. That's the measure that his glory will be revealed in the public, not just behind closed doors. And so I know I'm submitting my heart and saying, God, I'm drinking, I'm doing it. I'm drinking the cup. I'm laying aside the weights. I'm laying them aside by God's grace. And I'm telling you, I write things on my hand. I put things on my fridge. I write things on my wall. Dave's like, what are you doing? I'm like, it's paint, hon. Paint. You know, I tape things on the mirror. I have things on my dashboard in my car. I hope that's even safe. But, you know, like, try and not put them over your speedometer and gas thing. But put them, you know, plaster your life with the word, because God's word is what gives us power to walk this walk that he's called us to. And so I'm going to just pray. I just, one last thing. When we talk about faith, which means that you believe that what God says is true, right? That you believe that if you're drinking your cup, you will experience this joy. God's glory will, the things we're doing in secret will be exposed in the public, and the sense of God's glory will be exposed. It requires faith. And the Greek word that's used a lot of times for faith is to be persuaded. And so I think about that and I'm like, am I persuaded that this is truth? Am I persuaded what the word says is true. I hung on my wall one. And this is like a popular verse that I've heard, but like I hung on my fridge for a while because it said, you know, the children of your youth are a blessing and they're like arrows in the hand of a mighty warrior. And it's like maybe overused even in church Sunday school programs. I don't know. But I was looking at that and I'm like, am I persuaded 100% that that is truth? Because if I am, then there is no excuse. This is joy only and privilege and grace that God has given me. And I hung that on there until I believe it, till it's in my soul, till I live it, I breathe it, I taste it. And we need to do that with every situation that God's put us in. Persuade your spirit to the truth of God in your life. Hang it on your fridge. Put it like, that's why the Jews, you know, like put things on their forehead and things like that. I mean, you don't have to do that, but think of ways to inundate your life with that till your heart is persuaded of the truth of God and you're willing to fully drink the cup that God's put before you. Exhort yourself, strengthen yourself. Get around people, you know, exhausted people a lot of time when they gather, they give themselves excuses for not walking where God's called them to walk. Don't do that. Get around people, like commit to the family here. Get around people who are gonna exhort you and encourage you and say, you can do this, let's keep pressing in, let's keep pressing on. So I'm gonna just pray and I just encourage you guys to, in your heart, like go before God right now. Ask him, Lord, you know, what is it that, what part in your story am I playing, Lord? Help me to drink this cup that you've given me with grace and with joy. Not just grip, but with grace and with joy, and to drink fully and deeply, to measure out in secret everything that you've put in me with excellence. Father, thank you, God, for who you are. Thank you that you're a good dad, Lord. Thank you that you care for us, Lord, that you have given us all a cup, Lord, all a roll, all grace from heaven, God, for your glory, God. Thank you that today, even Mother's Day, God, that you have chosen every mother in here, Father, for her children, for her role right now in history, Lord. Just come before God and cry out to him in your own heart and ask him to speak to you.